And welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. I'm so excited that you are joining us here today and tuning into this episode. If you like this podcast, I just want to remind you to leave a review. So leaving a review helps us because it gives us feedback, and I'd love it if you could tell us if you like the podcast. If you don't, feel free to leave that review. And if you do like this podcast and you want to support us, then please share it with a friend or a family member. I will let you proceed with the episode. Hello, and welcome back to Masked Monologues. So today I have a repeat guest. I have Guy Dazlin with me here today, and he is going to introduce himself for all of you who might have not listened to his first podcast episode with me. So it's nice to speak with you again, Guy. Would you like to tell us about who you are?
Yes, thank you so much for having me back again on your podcast, Masked Monologues. My name is Guy Dazlin. I'm 32 years old. I hold several advanced degrees in art, history, English literature. I also have teaching certificate in both professions, in art history and English. The English language. I teach at the preparatory school for English at Bar Ilan University. I'm also an artist. I've exhibited some of my works in two different exhibitions and not too long ago. And I like to write poems, short stories. I'm working on a fully fledged novel that's due to come out hopefully by the beginning of the next fiscal year. And I also commission paintings and art. I focus on portrait. That's my specialty. And that's it in general.
Okay, so I don't believe that on our last podcast episode, we spoke a lot about your writing. Do you mind telling me what you're doing with that? And you're saying that you have a book coming out in about a year's time. So I'd love to know what that book is about and when you started writing it.
Yeah, so I thought up the idea maybe 2 years ago. I was working at a bookstore. I was a book clerk, and I had a lot of different ideas for books in the past. A lot of neat, kind of fascinating ideas that just sprang up. And I never followed through on almost anything. I channeled it into poems, short stories that I would write in English, and also some playwriting. So I wrote two fully fledged plays. They run about 70 pages or so, each one. One is a comedy and the other one is a tragedy. They are both historical works of fiction. The other one is set in the Middle Ages. The other one is more in ancient times, specifically Roman, Greco-Roman culture. I thought up of a new idea, focusing more on my culture. And I thought I can try to rewrite the story of Genesis, essentially, and make it into a kind of a post-apocalyptic novel fiction. There are some kind of the fictional characters from history, from different religious beliefs, systems, different mysticism and the esoteric. So a lot of principles and that draw from that. Also a lot of different influences from popular culture, and specifically my culture, different quotes, different memorable lines from poems, a lot of sayings. So there are a lot of popular kind of sayings and from the Bible, from my own culture. And I integrated and weave a lot of different elements together. And I'm still working on it, writing it. And hopefully it will get translated into English because, of course, English is a universal language. Everybody in the world knows English on some level. So I've been working on that, and there are a lot of elements that I drew from, as I've mentioned, mysticism and esoteric, some mystic practices. So I kind of delved deeper into writing about these subjects and integrating them into the core as story, narrative, and plot. And my characters, even I invented some characters, but other characters are like, come from angelology. Angelology refers to the study of angels in across all cultures, because every culture has some type of, has some archetype of an angel. So that's one example. The other example is working with a core universal principles, life, death, time, humanity, in a broader sense, focusing on manhood, on womanhood. So I try to interweave a lot of different principles, and it's not a linear plot. It does tend to jump around, the perspective changes with every chapter. So it focuses on one character. I try not to introduce new characters very, very hastily. I introduce the characters in the previous chapters. And if that character is deserving of a kind of a denouement, a kind of apex or crescendo to their story, and then I will try to interweave that character into the core main plot, because there are a lot of different side plots that I developed that have to do with the main plot. They touch upon some of the, they are interconnected in some ways. In other ways, they are separate entities. And I'm just struggling a bit now. I have the skeleton of the story laid out, all the different elements, all the different joints and organs of the skeleton that needs to be added on. And I'm just thinking about how to end the story in a kind of logical and tactical way, because the rest of it is already written. I just need to understand what the purpose of this story is. And once I get that eureka moment, I will be set and the book would have been finished. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to ask you, this is a bit, it's still in the same realm of writing. When you first started speaking, you say that you've had experience writing a play before. And I want to know what the difference is when writing a play versus writing a story. How do you take stage actions into consideration?
Yeah.
And would it, you approach differently?
Yes, I would, because I was inspired by Shakespeare when I started writing. So it's very insane. So I wrote the entire thing. I completely edited. It took me about 1 week to finish the entire play. It's, mind you, it's 70 pages long. And I drafted and wrote all of the characters, all of the action, all of the stage play, as you've mentioned. It's very different to a novel. It can be even more confusing to keep up with everything that's going on in terms of the plot, in terms of the characters, the qualities of the characters. You have to keep your finger on the pulse, and you just, when you know a character, you can simply write it, no problem. If you know the character well enough, if you've established who the character is, what's the origin of the character, different, even stuff like speech patterns or repetitive kind of verbiage, something a character would say. So you need to be very consistent. I'll take, for example, my comedy play. There's 5 acts to the play. It starts, it's set in the Middle Ages, the High Middle Ages, around 9 to 10, 10th century or so. We're talking about Europe, okay? The continent of Europe, but I changed, in terms of geography, I changed a lot of places. Almost all of the places are real, but there are some like cities that I invented, some events in history that I changed. The names of the characters, they are completely new. They do not exist in history. They all have European names. They are all from European descent. But to write a play, it's not as easy as you think. It's not introduction, action, dialogue. It's not like that. You have to understand who is actually standing on the stage. When do they come in? When do they go out of the scene? Why is the scene even happening? There are a lot of questions that you need to assess within yourself before you can actually put a pen to paper. And it's quite difficult because in my play, I have around 20 characters, which is around the average of a play. Most plays have between 10 to 20 or so characters. Any given play like Christopher Marlowe's The Jew of Venice, for example, Faust, they all have between 20 characters or so. That's the average. So I drew inspiration from Shakespeare. I took a lot of the vocabulary comes from Shakespeare, but I played around the English language to fit my purpose. I wanted the characters to sound funny, act funny, do funny things on stage. And they do. It's a bit too pastiche. It's a bit cliche. But I think that's the charm of the place. I'll tell you the plot in general. So there is this famous city that is supposedly the capital of a great and important empire. The empire is called Ithaca. It's not Ithaca, it's Ithaca. Okay, so Ithaca. I stole the name directly from Spinoza's book called Ethica in Latin, which of course means ethics. Ethics in English. It's one of the greatest philosophical tractates to ever be put to paper and printed, in my opinion. So I won't divulge too far about the content of Ethica, but it's very complex. It's interesting. It's not the most original philosophical work, but it's certainly one of the most revolutionary, ingenious, in my opinion. So essentially, it's a theodicy. Theodicy is a Greek word that means trying to explain why good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people. It tries to justify. So I'll give you the dictionary term, justifying the ways of God to man. Okay. That's the literal definition, justifying the ways of God to man. So I played on that idea. So in the play, the full title is called The Fall of Ithaca. Ithaca is a fictional superpower, capital, citadel, whatever, megalopolis, whatever word you want to choose for it. And rumor spreads across the Mediterranean and reaches the courts of Europe that Ithaca has burnt to the ground. Nobody knows the reason why, but there's a messenger that delivers the message to an important king, and he receives the message and he starts to wail and mourn for the burning the burning of the great Ithaca. And so it's very funny. The characters start to faint and wail. And so that's the beginning of the play. I won't ruin it. I won't spoil it for you. But if you want, I'll do. And I'll spoil it for you if you want. So in the end, they discover that Ithaca has not burnt. And in fact, there's a rival army that try to take over the superpower. So it was just a false information that was being fed by this messenger about the plot. And the king essentially assembles an army to go to Jerusalem and try to banish there's a good word for it in English. It's called the birth. So someone trying to take over the power, take over the throne for themselves, for example. So yeah, it has a lot of cliche. It has a blind prophet. It has a jester. It has a very unruly and a very senile king. Exactly the same as King Lear. Also has a very attractive daughter, a princess that has a lot of suitors. So it's quite funny. It has a very classical style. It's written in Renaissance English, so it's a little bit hard to understand sometimes. But I like it because it's my creation. Of course, I would like it. And yeah, I would like to publish it to a wider audience and to see what reaction may arise from the wider public. Yeah.
I'm wondering when you write a play, because you have to have timing in mind. And as someone who's, I've looked at plays or I've read some plays, I've been familiar with a couple of plays, and I've got friends who are in musical theater and do a lot of performances. When you write 70 pages for a play, about how long does that turn out to be? Does it range depending on how actors take, how long they take to?
Actually, there's good this statistic on it. I'll give you an example. So Hamlet is purported to be the longest play that has ever been written. I would question that, but it is very long. It's around 170 pages, okay? It depends, of course. It depends on which edition. It depends if you go with the longer version, of course. If you go with the longer version, if you want to stage it, produce it, it will take you around four hours and 20 minutes or so. If you go with the shorter version, it will still take you around three hours. For a play, it's very long, 4.5 hours. There are directors that try to direct the entire thing. Famously, one of the greatest English actors, producers, directors, a very great artist, Kenneth Branagh, tried to film and shoot the entire play. He did a very majestic work, very notable work, and a variation on Hamlet. I liked it. Some of the parts were a bit over the top, a bit quirky and out of place, wonky. But in general, I liked it a lot. So if I were to stage my play, it will take, I think, roughly in the ballpark of 2 hours. Yeah, 2 hours. And it doesn't, I'll tell you the truth, it doesn't matter how fast or how slow the players read their lines. You're going to be surprised by that. But that's the truth. It also comes down to the production. So if you have a very expensive and lavish production company producing the play, it takes a lot of manpower. It's very stressful. People have to be very skillful, very with everything they do on stage, all the different props, of course, the the actors have to change, be able to change their clothes very quickly. The wardrobe department has to be on set all of the time if there is any kind of a wardrobe failure. So the staff have to be, they have to be on board all of the time throughout the play, during the play, 2 hours or so. Yeah. Some of the characters have very long lines. Some of them have very short lines, very quick, roughly 2 hours. If you include all of the scenes, if you include all of the characters, if you include all of the different stage play, yeah, it will take roughly 2 hours. So that's about the running time of a typical play, between 1.5 hours to 2 hours. So yeah, it's in the middle of average.
Okay, so what I want to know now is, how much of it, is it part of the writer's job to write the stage, what they want the stage to look like, what they want the props to be, or is that more under the director's jurisdiction? How does that work?
That is a wonderful question. Most of the time, the writer is present on stage with the production crew, with the director. Most of the time, they don't want them to get it wrong. They don't want to embarrass themselves. They don't want to embarrass the crew and the production staff and the director or the theater. So they wanted to get it right. But that's a wonderful question, because Shakespeare has been long gone for 100 years has been long gone. So nobody can take a stage direction from Shakespeare anymore. They can try and rely on some of the manuscripts that survive from Renaissance England at that time. Almost none of it is original. Almost all of the material is printed. Sometimes it's a second or fourth or seventh edition, and it's never, almost never, the original manuscript. They call them the folios. Shakespeare's plays are called the folios and quartos. The folios is a French word meaning the papers, meaning the original copies. The quartos meaning the printed editions. So it's very hard to tell. Do I think that an artist, a creator, an author, a playwright needs to be on stage in order to direct the play himself? I don't think so. Him or herself, I don't think so. But it certainly helps. But I'll tell you something else. I've interviewed a lot of artists in my career, and whenever I ask them some kind of a question, and sometimes they answer, "I didn't see it like that before." Wow, you opened up some kind of a new venue that I did not know exists. So you mined a new vein for me to, or you gave a new perspective for my artwork, for my creation. Sometimes the play changes in the production process, even if the author or the creator or the playwright is on stage, in studio, working with the actors, working with the producers, working with the wardrobe department, working with the lighting technicians, music technicians even. Sometimes it comes out a little different than the original product. It will never be exactly the same. It's like taking Narnia and trying to put it on screen to make it into a film. It will never be exactly the same, because there are a lot of constraints that even high definition CGI and effects departments cannot broach some of the difficulties because it's a fantasy genre, because there are a lot of different fantastical things that happen, a lot of feats of strength or valor or whatever that are simply physically impossible. Newton's three laws of physics still apply, even though it's CGI. You might be surprised to hear that, but that's the truth. CGI cannot broach that smoothly. Those problems cannot be ironed out so easily. So yeah, I don't think necessarily a playwright needs to be on stage in order for the play to become successful, renowned, or even good, or impactful, for example. Yeah, I think I think it comes down to atmosphere. What is the atmosphere that you're actually creating on stage? Is the fidelity to the original work still presented on stage, or is it some type of variation on the original work, some rendition that is not faithful to the core material? So it varies a lot.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for joining us here again today. And if people want to connect with you, where can they find you? How can they reach out to you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Yeah, exactly. The way you spell my name as it appears. I have an email that you can reach me if you have any business inquiries or commissions you would like to order. I'm available by email. Yeah, so that's generally how you can, these are the two methods that you can reach me by, the main methods.
Okay, thank you so much. And I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. And please go check out Guy Dazin. I'm sure he'd love to speak with you, connect with you. And we hope to see you next time.